This episode of A Few Things with Claire and Erica is brought to you by the wonderful people at Bye Bye Baby. You should find one of their stores or go to buybybaby.com if you know any babies.
I'm Erica Wise, host of Let's Get Real, the cooking show about finding, preparing, and eating food. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more. Welcome to A Few Things with Claire and Erica.
I'm Erica.
I'm Claire, and this is our podcast.
Yay!
Yay!
It is based on a newsletter that we send every week called 10 Things. Every Monday, we round up 10 of our favorite discoveries, and then every Wednesday, we talk about some of them on this podcast.
That's right, and it all is located on our website, ofakind.com, where we sell the pieces and tell the stories of emerging designers.
It's that simple.
It's all that simple and it's all that complicated, just like life. We have lots of good stuff to read and lots of good stuff to buy on our website
now.
So head on over. Today we are talking about headaches.
And like actual headaches, not just things that are headaches, which would be such a long episode.
We could never. We would dedicate an entire season to it.
Well, although we try not to go negative, but we do on our laundry list of potential topics. There's one just called gripes.
Just, you know, all the things.
All the things that upset us.
Yeah.
Like for me, 2-page resumes, for example.
Exactly. And the phrase, no problem.
No worries.
We saw a play and somebody had a line about how much she hates no worries. And I knew Erica was just celebrating in her seat.
It spoke to my heart.
Today we're talking about actual headaches, specifically migraines, which
yes.
We both suffer from. And as it turns out, like millions and millions of people do.
How many?
I forgot to write it down. It was like 36 million or something.
That's
but I don't know.
A lot of million.
Well, once you get to that many, though,
why even count?
The difference between all the numbers, right? Like, it's a lot.
And I'm sure my economist husband would be like, yep, what's the difference? It's basically everybody.
That's how I feel.
Yeah.
The New York Times has a lot of content about migraines. They at some point dedicated an entire blog to it. So if you are curious, go find the number there. But 75% of people who suffer from it are women. So,
and I feel like this is why migraines haven't been cured, or why, like, part of the problem.
I mean, obviously, that's how I feel too.
It's like the birth control thing.
Yeah, I'm like, it's a women's problem.
So that's why we're so slow to fix it. Yeah.
But there have been a lot of articles published recently about, like, how is it possible that no one's figured out a cure for migraines lately? And it is, I guess, just it's a complicated thing. There's a million different types of them. They're often misdiagnosed or not diagnosed.
Problem is that no one knows exactly what causes them. There are triggers, but there isn't a single cause.
So there needs to be a lot of research basically into it. And in my own research into the research of migraines, I discovered that Nancy McCain, John McCain's wife, suffers from migraines and decided to make this her platform at some point, and said that, you know, if we can dedicate billions of dollars to studying how cow flatulence affects the ozone layer, we can totally dedicate some money to migraine research.
Drop a couple dollars
on
this.
Yeah, exactly. So what are your migraine triggers?
Well, when I was growing up, when I was like in high school, I used to get really bad migraines with the Aura, which if you don't get migraines, it's basically like you see like a halo of light around things. I don't know. It's really strange.
I've never gotten that.
It feels like ethereal. It's very odd.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's before the migraine happens.
It's kind of like, kind of like it leads into it. Mm-hmm. And then at the height of these migraines, the left side of my body would go numb.
Oh my God, that's terrifying.
And I would lose feeling in the left side of my body. So at one point, like the first time it happened, I thought I was having a stroke or something.
Because that's
pretty much what I understand it to be. So those migraines, I don't know if it was just that period of my life or what exactly was happening.
Well, it was like when you were a senior in high school, right?
It was a senior in high school.
That was when I first started getting migraines.
And I think
that's a time when a lot of women start getting
migraines. I think so.
Hormonally, something shifts.
I had a neighbor who thought that there were food triggers for her. So I started cutting out some of those things. Peanut butter and bananas were on my list.
Yeah.
But I know red wine is like dry binding gives me headaches still. Yeah. Doesn't give me migraines, but gives me really bad headaches from the tannins, possibly. Mm-hmm. Aged cheese is a thing for people. We ate a cheese plate right before this, so hopefully, hopefully that's not the case.
Migraine or alcohol is definitely one of my many triggers, in the sense that, like, if I drink too much and I'm hungover, I will get a migraine.
Right.
But my mother, for the longest time, was, like, convinced that it was alcohol. You know, I needed to just cut out alcohol completely, and that's why I get so many migraines. Not like I'm drinking so much, but she's like, you need to just, like, basically not drink. And for the
first time... So you've done this study.
Well, yeah. So
you've conducted a scientific study.
The first time I did, like, a full month without drinking for a dry January, I had one of the worst, longest migraines of my life. And not that I was happy about it, but I was definitely, like... triumphant. Like, alcohol is not at the root of this, which was a huge relief for me.
Totally. Well, that's part of the hard part about this, is that, you know, it affects your life in these ways, and you feel like you have to cut these out or make sacrifices in your lifestyle to, you know, combat these things, or just know that you're doing things that maybe are going to make you feel like garbage in such a serious way the next day.
And, like, for me, and I think for a lot of people, like, you just get them so often or with such, you know, regularity, it's like you can, at some point, you just kind of give up and you're like, I can't. You know, there's a million different triggers. Like, if I don't sleep right, or if I get shoulder tension, like, I no longer ever really carry heavy bags on my shoulders, and I carry clutches a lot because shoulder tension is a huge cause for me.
Shoulder tension is definitely one for me too, because the last time that I got migraines badly for a stint was like a year and a half ago, maybe, when I was going spinning pretty regularly.
Yes, spinning was a huge trick. I had to stop.
You basically, like, because you're hunched over the bike and your shoulders are up and your neck muscles are all tense, that I left a spinning class and within 45 minutes had one of the worst migraines I've ever had and, you know, was out cold for like the next 10 hours, which is really frustrating, especially when it's exercise induced, because feel like I'm doing something good for myself.
Well, spinning is a huge trigger for me because, yes, you hunch over. And the other thing that can happen with really intense exercise, like the first time I ever did a race, there's these migraines you can get that there's been more research and sort of like proof of them lately, from what I read, where if you are really, really stressed, you know, physically or mentally, your body almost sort of like kicks into protective gear and will protect
you. It's like adrenaline kind of rush. Yeah,
while the adrenaline is happening. When you finally relax and come down from it, that's when the migraine
release.
Stresses. Yeah, exactly. The release and the migraine kicks in. So after I did my first race, I had a terrible, like, several day long migraine. I used to get them all the time after finals week in college, where I would like go really intensely for a week and I'd be totally fine. And then as soon as it was all over, I'd get a terrible migraine.
Because then you also don't get to enjoy this like relaxing moment of your life. That's terrible. Are these the rebound migraines? Is that
rebound migraine? Okay. I should have done more research on it because I'm going to misspeak, but I think rebound migraines are like when you take some sort of medicine.
Oh, okay.
And then it comes back almost worse.
I see.
But
it like triumphs over the medicine.
Yeah, exactly. And then the other type that is like the most obvious thing that we haven't mentioned is that, and that is a huge trigger for me, is periods. And I get them.
Yeah.
And this also goes back to, you raised the issue of birth control. I am on a hormonal birth control that makes them so much worse, but it's also the least bad of all of the birth controls I've ever been on. So I just sort of put up with the migraine. So it sucks. And I get them anyway. And they're definitely genetic. Every woman in my family suffers from them, and some of the men. But the one cure, or not cure, but sort of like treatment that I've found that is actually somewhat preventative, is acupuncture. And I think that has a lot to do with the fact that that shoulder tension is such a big trigger for me.
Yeah.
So it's one of these things where it's like you have to be dedicated and go sort of like every week or every 2 weeks. And over time, I think you will just find you get them less. But it's been huge for me, and I've heard it's been huge for a lot of other people too.
I'm going to your acupuncturist tomorrow.
So excited. After Craig
work.
High.
So what? Wait, I should know the name of this place. City Acupuncture.
City Acupuncture. It's on the second floor of our really random office building in the financial district of New York.
So it's super convenient for us. I don't know about you, but it's really convenient.
Say it looks like a war hospital because it's like it's one big room with a bunch of cots and curtains in between them. But we were having drinks with somebody recently who turned out she also went there, and she explained it. She was like, it's like socialized medicine. And I was like, well, that sounds chic.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm going to stop saying it looks like a war hospital and be like, it's socialized medicine. She meant something.
It's what Bernie Sanders wants.
Right? She was referencing the fact that, like, they take health insurance and something, something, something. But I was like, I like that. It's socialized medicine. God. But they do, amazing. Like, you walk in there and you're like, I have a migraine. And they're like, totally, I've got this. And they put, they'll put needles sort of in my back and my neck, sort of like around my ears and stuff. And it helps, you know, it lessens the severity of them. It lessens the frequency of them. And so if I do it regularly, the migraines don't run my life in the same way.
Has adjusting the way that you sit at the desk helped at all? Do you
Definitely.
Think you have this little should I call it a device? It's basically like
it's equivalent of plastic.
It's like basically a phone book that your feet sit on, mm-hmm. but you've paid for it.
It fixes it exactly. I got it from Amazon instead of for free. It is so
it's angled. Yeah, I'm not giving it enough credit.
I do a lot of. I'll buy basically any device that claims to improve posture.
Yeah,
this thing you put your feet on so that your legs are at more of a 90-degree angle and you sit up straighter. And I've fiddled with the height of my computer screen, and I'm desperate for there to be some sort of a service, a la the Geek Squad, who will come into your office and just fix your computer screen and all that and
yes.
your chair for you. Because it's like, we don't work in a big corporate environment where there's like, I don't know what big corporate environment like has just on HR, like, this is the person in charge of fixing
your
posture.
Desk.
Yeah.
Nope.
But I want that. But the other thing that I do think really helped is I installed the Flux app on my computer.
I think that helps me a lot too.
Oh, you got it working.
Finally.
Good job. Erica was having issues, but it adjusts the brightness of your computer screen based on the time of day. So when it's darker out, the screen sort of is more warm and glowy.
Yeah, it also, but it's not just like a brightness thing because I don't know, that bothers mm-hmm. me when the monitor automatically does that if you're in like a bright room or whatever. Mm-hmm. It'll give it like a yellow tint that sort of mimics a sunset or something so that you don't have this harsh white light coming off your monitor while the sun is setting. And I do always get headaches at like 4 or 5 p.m. and they have significantly lessened. Not migraines, just like sort of regular old headaches.
So
I get regular old headaches sometimes. You don't.
I never do. And this is like, and my mother is the same way. And I know other people, I used to get, you know, sometimes I'd have a normal headache. Sometimes I would get a migraine. I don't ever get a normal headache. If I'm starting to feel like I'm getting a headache, it will inevitably turn into a migraine, which is so frustrating. And I get them so frequently. And so the thing that I have to have on me at all times, it's like the equivalent of, I don't know, an asthmatic having an inhaler, is Imitrex, which is the one medicine that really works for me.
But I took that when mine were bad.
It does work.
No, we're not doctors.
Yeah.
Like everything that follows, we're not doctors. You might have guessed that if you didn't know for sure, we're not doctors.
So I rely pretty heavily on Imitrex. The like urban legend, which is I know to be true, is because this happened to my aunt, is that if you take it too much, it stops working for you for life.
Oh,
which is like
antibiotics.
It's the scariest thing to me because these migraines are so utterly, completely debilitating. So I just try to ration it. And so especially recently, I've been better about going to acupuncture, but I also have been trying this thing that a nurse recommended to me, which is that as soon as you feel the headache coming on, to try taking 2 extra strength Tylenol, which felt like sort of a revelation, because after all of this time looking every which way and going to doctors and getting fancy prescriptions for migraines, to have someone say, well, try
Tylenol.
Extra strength Tylenol. But I actually do think that, you know, that combined with like coffee, a little bit of caffeine, a little bit of sugar, if it's really early enough in your headache, can sometimes sort of stop it from becoming a full-blown migraine.
My friend Laura, who is also a migraine sufferer, and this is like something we talk about fairly regularly when I see her.
It's so terrible. It's like, I cannot believe people don't talk about it more.
No.
I can't believe it's not more of a thing. It's embarrassing too, because if you're with somebody who doesn't have it and you have it,
it feels like sort of like a phony, like
completely
and dog ate my homework excuse for feeling like shit.
And how do you explain? Like, I just physically cannot leave the house right now.
So Laura, to take your 2 extra strength mm-hmm. Tylenol thing a little further, she had a nurse recommend to her two Tylenol and one ibuprofen together. Okay. And apparently that combination is like dynamite migraine killer.
I'm gonna
try it.
So
worth trying. She just came back. She was just in Paris, mm-hmm. and she got a really bad migraine when she was there and didn't have any of her meds with her. And apparently in France, they sell something that is a combination of caffeine, codeine, and paracetamol that she thought was like amazing. And it was gone in 30 minutes. And
wow.
she promised to share her stash with us.
That's amazing.
Again, not doctors.
So the other thing. So one time I mentioned this app that I was using for a while called Migraine Buddy. It's the best sort of migraine tracker app I found. It's pretty easy. I did really like it. I found it useful in terms of like figuring out, okay, actually how many migraines a month am I getting and how long are they lasting and are they getting worse? The thing that I found it not useful for was triggers, because as I said, everything is a trigger for
right.
me. So it wasn't like I was like revealing something to me, but I mentioned it in our 10 Things newsletter, and more than one person wrote back and recommended this thing called Migrelief. Or it's maybe Migrelief. I don't know. It's a homeopathic, it's a pill. And you have to take it twice a day, every day. And then they say it doesn't really start working for 4 to 6 weeks. So if you know me, you know that that didn't happen.
Yeah. But that's a pretty huge commitment.
It's a big commitment. And the other thing was that some people had said it causes rebound headaches and that, so you shouldn't take it for that. Some people basically swear by it. It's sort of like coconut, or it's like oil pulling,
right?
Where like some people are like, this is total BS. And other people are like,
this
totally
is life changing.
Changed my life.
Yeah.
You fall down in a rabbit hole with it, but I don't know if you've tried it and you swear by it, let me know, or maybe try it.
Speaking of sort of homeopathic or more mm-hmm. natural things, I don't think these would work for full-blown migraines by any stretch, but for headache type of things, we found a little rundown on the internets that we will link to that recommends cayenne and water, a combination, because water is good for dehydration, which obviously yeah. causes headaches, and then cayenne blocks pain signals. And it would be very easy to keep a little container of
yeah.
cayenne pepper in your desk. Like, that seems
like
a very...
I will try basically anything except apparently taking a pill twice a day.
Well, I know you will try this.
Yeah.
Peppermint oil, because you...
Peppermint oil, actually...
Love.
Oh my God,
oil.
I can't believe I didn't bring this up. I do think peppermint oil is really huge for migraines. Like, it's sort of around the tension points.
Yes, and exactly. They basically yeah. say to rub it on your temples and like back of your neck,
yes, exactly.
where you have tension. And it's cooling and it's just sort of soothing
yeah.
and at least distracts people, I think, a little bit.
I think it helps with the tension. I do think for me anyway, it's so much related to tension, and the peppermint oil does sort of help soothe the tension a little bit.
And the last thing is ginger tea, which is an anti-inflammatory and is also good for nausea, which is I take ginger chews for nausea. And
interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you get really nauseous from migraines?
I get nauseous from everything.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah. Like anything you could get nauseous from, I get it.
I get really nauseous when they're really bad, but I'm lucky that I don't get the auras. I don't, unless it's so insane, I don't have to like lie in a bed completely.
Oh, that's good.
In the dark.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
yeah.
It's like so crazy to have a headache that I had it once that lasted like 14 days. It was nuts. And so, medical community, let's get on this. Let's solve
enough
this.
With these headaches.
Yeah,
let's
yeah.
go to commercial. So we are not parents.
Ooh, do you think that this is like breaking news? TMZ exclusive right here on Heritage Radio Network. We do not have kids. But we know people who do.
Tons of them. Brothers even.
Yes.
You would be shocked by how close we are to people who have children.
And we do a lot of like, but how do you figure all of this out? How do you decide what you need? And the answer so often is bye-bye baby. It turns out of another thing we did not know because we do not have kids, of all of the baby stores out there, bye-bye
baby. In the baby galaxy.
In the baby galaxy. Bye-bye baby is the hip one. Like, I seriously ask your friends.
They have the best jogging strollers,
one, yes.
the like video monitors. All
they have the self-installing car seats, all the crazy stuff, and they also have the basic stuff. So it's like the spot to go for expecting mothers. the part of the reason people love them so much is because they hire so many mothers to work in their stores.
People who've gone through this, people who know what you need and what you don't need, which
mompreneurs.
And I think the, like, what you don't need thing is such a key thing. Totally. Another thing that they do that helps with that is their registry is super social oriented. Mm-hmm. So your friends and family members who do have, like, all the tips on this can share that, and make sure you're like nailing that thing so that
be like, girl, don't get that diaper pail. You will still be able to smell those stinky diapers. Get this one. That's
Bye Bye Baby. Make sure you get the right diaper pail.
That's right.
Yeah, totally.
You're welcome, Bye Bye Baby marketing department.
Yeah.
All right. Go check them out. There's probably a Bye Bye Baby by you where you can make an appointment online to meet with an expert. So you just, like, have the appointment set to go. You're good.
Do it.
Or just start your online registry and get your
ByeByeBaby.com.
That's right.
Hi, we're back. You're listening to A Few Things with Claire and Erica. We were just talking about headaches, and now we're going to talk about things that are not headaches.
Liar, we were just distracted by our phones, and the engineer had to knock on the window and be like, yo, the commercial's over.
Well, I don't really always know how long the commercials are going or if there's another commercial,
too.
They used
to be longer, I think.
Yeah, and there's sometimes more music, and you know. Do you see how I'm trying to, like, not accept the blame for this?
It's not our fault. We got distracted by our phones. Is our guest on the line?
Hi.
This is Gabby Dalkin of What's Gabby Cooking. We are obsessed with her as a human being, and her site.
And her Snapchat.
Sorry, Gabby, not to say I like your Snapchat more than you, but your Snapchat is such good. It's like one of the best Snapchats there is.
It's a really, really good Snapchat.
High production value.
Yes.
High production value. High production value.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, I have a good time with it.
You do.
So
Gabby has a cooking blog.
And we have been so blessed to be able to meet the food that Gabby cooks. And let me tell you, it lives up to, like, it's not just like pretty pictures on a website because we've eaten the food.
It's so
amazing. And it's always, so accessible.
It just makes me be like, why am I not doing this? Because she makes it look so easy, and it's always easy to eat. It's always just like, dig in, have fun, and put a lot of sauce on it. And it just is the kind of home cook I'd like to be. I aspire to be.
So,
thanks, ladies.
Yeah. So the first time we met Gabby was at some dinner party that she made seem like it was no big deal to just, like, throw this thing together for 8 people, super casual, just tons of food that all looked gorgeous and we're all going to act like it's the littlest thing in the world.
Just no big deal. Just throw it together.
Gabby, how'd you do that?
I was with Jamie and Kevin. I think I made them do all the grocery shopping and then I just showed up and cooked.
You just put it all together. So
yeah.
What is your ethos? What are your sort of rules when it comes to entertaining for a big group like that?
I like to do things that people can kind of make, like, DIY their own adventure. So I think, like, not the first time we met, but the last time we did this big bruschetta bar situation.
Yes.
So people could just kind of make their own things and use different cheeses and meats and sauces. And I think that's such a great way to entertain because it's really easy for everyone there. I mean, in today's world, someone's like, I don't like whatever, and I don't like this, and I can't eat bread. And I'm like, well, we can't be friends. But there's a little bit of everything.
But it takes the pressure off you because you as the host, you did all the work before, you put the plate down, and then it's up to them. And I love that because I get so stressed about how am I going to get all the plates out there at once and how's it going to be all hot at once. And you are done by the time the person walks into the door. And everybody serves themselves.
Yeah, it's just my favorite. I mean, I was a private chef for years, and the people I cooked for were like family to me, and so I was always a part of all the parties. So I like to be done before people came over, so I could enjoy and, like, have a glass of wine and talk to people. So I've always just kind of been of that mindset of getting things done ahead of time and then letting whatever happens happen.
You also do this sort of magical thing where you put together, you know, sort of big serving platters or sort of large format dishes, I guess, that are presented so beautifully. What do you think the tricks are to making that work?
To make big pile of food on a tray look good.
I am really fortunate to work with two of my best friends. One's a food photographer and one's a food stylist, Matt and Adam.
Please don't tell us that having a food stylist as your best friend is the trick to making everything look good.
I mean, he definitely taught me everything I know, and his
Okay.
His cheese boards and crudité platters are way prettier than when I make them myself. But it's all about. He's actually with me right now. I can ask him.
Hi.
Hi.
Here, Adam, come say hi. Hold on. You can say hi. This is Adam. He's a food stylist.
Hi, Adam.
Hey, Adam.
You're on the radio.
Oh, that's surprising. I was just stuffing my face with the Rice Krispie treat.
Yum. Adam, how
We're talking about crudité boards and the secret to making them beautiful.
Oh, I really, really, really love doing them. I think just, you know, color, movement, textures, and flavors, it's such a fun palette to play with.
It all looks so good. So what when you're shopping for these, are you deciding, okay, we're going to get carrots because we need some orange in this? Or are you doing it based on what you want to eat and then figuring out how to make it look good afterwards?
I think we always think about a photo first, and we want there to be lots of different colors. So we have carrots that are orange and celery is green and little mini bell peppers that are red and yellow and, you know, dried fruits that are different colors, just so your eyes always have something new to look at.
You also play with scale in this way where you'll, you know, keep certain things whole, like those mini bell peppers or like cherry tomatoes, and then cut up other things in more interesting ways than I would cut them up myself if it were left to me, like, you know, spears of zucchini or something like that.
Yeah, well, Adam's really good at cutting things up because it's his job.
Well, you know, it's like I try to force myself to think outside of the box because how many I've been doing this for like 12 years. How many times have I made a crudité platter? But I'm always trying, looking for new ways to slice and dice and to make it look fresh for me. You know, it's gonna be the first time somebody else seeing it, but I've seen it a million times, so I just want to try new things.
So, how do you make a cucumber look fresh?
A super sharp knife. And, well, you know, I'll be honest with you. It's like half the time I'm like, okay, where does this cucumber need to go and how big can I make it or how little do I have to make it? So
it's a little bit like putting a puzzle together. It's a little bit like putting a puzzle together.
100%.
Okay. What about the cheese plate? Because I always want my cheese plates to look really sophisticated and like I totally know what I'm doing and I understand all the cheese things, but really I'm just like, I don't know, a hard one and a soft one and maybe a yellow
one
too.
A stinky one.
Yeah. Do you guys have rules for that?
When I was a private chef, I would go to like Whole Foods and talk to the cheesemonger there and ask him to pick out 5 or 6 different kinds of cheeses for me. I remember when we first started doing cheese boards, I would come down to the studio with like 5 different kinds of cheddar. And Adam was like, that's unacceptable. Like, we have to mix it up a little bit. So, you know, we get like a soft cheese, like a brie, a goat's cheese, maybe in a log or something different. What's that orange cheese called?
Memelette.
Yeah. Whatever.
Yeah. I always think that people also forget about Parmesan. It is delicious.
Oh, I love fresh Parmesan just eaten in chunks. It's so good.
It's so salty and fantastic, but nobody ever puts it on a cheese tray.
That's a good call.
For that.
Italians, the first time I ever had it on a cheese tray was in Italy, and it was like just the freshest, most moist Parmesan, and there was just one of those little like diamond-shaped knives, so you just chunk it off, and it was life-changing.
And it's so sexy.
It is very sexy. It is very, very sexy. So what are the little, like, what are we doing these days? Is it all about dried fruits, honey? What are the sweeteners and texture?
What are the accoutrements for
exactly,
the cheese plate?
On a cheese plate?
We always put honey on ours and then some sort of preserve, usually like a fig preserve. We'll put dried fruit on, dates, cranberries.
I'm a big fan of mostarda, the candy fruit with the mustardy kind of stuff going on. It's super pretty and it's fun. People don't use it that often, so it's a good way to impress people with your cheese tray.
Feels unexpected. I like that. Is there anything, what's like the cutting edge new cheese thing that we need to know about though with this stuff? Is there something new? Or do these things not change?
I feel like I'm taking a test and I don't know the right answer.
That's okay. That's all right. Maybe these things don't change. I just know pretty soon I'm going to go and there's going to be like, I don't know, there's going to be
yak cheese and you're going to feel like you should have known about it earlier.
Exactly. Or like all of a sudden people are eating jelly beans with cheese.
I saw a TV show, there was camel cheese, and I just can't get into that.
Because do camels produce milk?
I think so, yeah.
I guess that makes sense.
What doesn't work well at a dinner party?
What doesn't work well at a dinner party?
Like, what are some flops?
That's a really good question. Anything that's too complicated that makes you have to be in the kitchen the whole time and you can't be with your guests.
Yeah,
I would stay away from souffles.
Yeah, agreed.
Good call.
You don't need to impress everybody with your souffle making skills. It's too complicated.
And who really wants to eat a souffle?
I mean, I do. Don't get me wrong. But that's something that I do in private.
Well, one thing that is not really a dinner party go-to for me that, Gabi, you completely changed my mind on was salmon. Because you made it into this, like,
planked, beautiful... like serves eight people thing.
And like this, the most perfect group dining protein I'd ever seen. Can you explain what that was all about?
Yeah, we just got a, was that the first time I met you guys?
Yes, it was.
That was, I just got a side of salmon from the grocery store and I laid it out on a baking sheet and then baked it with some lemon and salt and pepper and olive oil over it whole.
Okay.
And I think I just roasted it probably at like 400 degrees for 15, 20 minutes. And then I made a basil vinaigrette, which was my favorite go-to sauce in the entire world.
What's in that? It was so good.
It's so good. And you just drizzle it on top and like serve it with some lemon wedges. And people can just flake it apart and take as much as they want or as little as they want.
That's what I loved about it. You didn't even cut the salmon into fillets. It was just everybody sort of reached in and took as much as they want as if it were like a casserole.
Unlike chicken or steak or something, you don't have to like carve it and prep it for everybody.
Exactly. It was so easy.
Yeah, it's just easier to do it like that. And then if you're cooking one big piece of salmon, that's less things to keep your eyes on. And if you're trying to like sear eight pieces of salmon and flip them so they're all perfectly brown, and then you have to finish them in the oven. It's way more to think about than just doing one whole piece.
How do you know how much to get? You said you got literally an entire side of salmon?
Yeah, I normally get about a third of a pound per person. I think maybe a quarter to a third of a pound per person, especially if there are other things.
So like 4 to 6 ounces, yeah.
Yeah, like if you're putting quinoa or a salad or all that kind of... I mean, I think a quarter pound is probably... what most people end up eating.
I swear to God, if you guys try this, you will never make any other protein for a dinner party again, because it was just so easy and delicious and wonderful and simple and also pretty. I loved it.
Gabi, something I've learned about you is that you're a huge Trader Joe's advocate. What are your Trader Joe's go-tos that make, you know, having people over just so much easier?
I live for their like cracker section. They have every kind of cracker and they're all ripped off from Whole Foods and all like the fancy stores. But they're half the price. That's amazing. I also think they have great hummus. Like I keep their hummus stocked in my fridge.
Which
all
flavor?
Time. Which one?
Which flavor?
Oh, the Mediterranean hummus. It has like dried parsley and some pine nuts and olive oil on top, and it's in the bigger container. It's my favorite.
Do you ever make your own hummus, or is Trader Joe's just so good it's not worth it?
Say it again.
Do you ever make your own hummus?
Oh, all the time, but sometimes there's just no time for that, because when I make my own hummus, I peel each individual
I do that
garbanzo
too.
Bean.
I do that
too. Which is delicious and such a game changer, but also a huge pain in the ass.
Yes.
And so sometimes
that's
just
what husbands
can't be
bothered are for, by the
that.
Way. Because husbands cannot screw that up. It's like one very specific activity they can do. Just pop them out. It's sort of satisfying.
I saw a salsa on your last Snapisode, your chicken fajita Snapisode.
I saw that.
Oh my God, that salsa. It's the salsa especial from Trader Joe's, the medium heat one. It is. It's the only store-bought salsa I really love.
This Amazing. Is such good intel.
Okay, so Snapisodes are, to back up a little bit, Gabi does this thing on her Snapchat. Is it just once a week?
Fridays, Claire.
To me, it feels like it's all the time. I must just really watch your Snapchat a lot on Fridays. But it is an episode where she takes us through cooking a recipe, and it is so entertaining to watch. And it's
part of my Saturday morning ritual now.
Oh,
oh my God.
Like in bed or over coffee. And Thomas and I, my husband and I, watch it together. And afterward, every time I'm like, I don't know, she just does such a good job. And it's just like so good. He's like, I know. I watch it every week with you. And we talk about the same thing every time.
Well, the thing that I'm always so impressed by is it seems like you're both snapping it with one hand and cooking with the other. So my thought is always, if she can snap this and make it, I can definitely make the thing. It makes it feel really accessible for me.
So here's the thing about all of my recipes are super easy. I don't have like the time or the patience to sit in the kitchen for more than, you know, 20 or 30 minutes at a time. So everything I do is going to be really easy. But yes, I've learned to cook with one hand so I can snap with the other hand. And one day I'll get like an assistant or an intern or something to come over and help me. But I make such a fool out of myself when I'm doing these snap episodes that I'm just like, it's better to do it by myself and no one can laugh at me.
But they're so authentic.
Yeah, I don't
and so
want
good.
You to get an intern. No. I like when you're like, hold on, I have to stir this with two hands, so I got to put the phone down.
How many individual snaps are in a snap episode typically?
Oh my gosh, that's a great question.
Like 20 to 30 or something.
Probably
it's like a mini
like
cooking show.
5 minutes long.
Okay, 4 to 5
and
minutes.
And they're 10. Yeah, like 4 to 5. However, four to five
so like 40
by 10 seconds.
So 40 to 50 snaps.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, no, I did that math
you've
wrong.
Really,
but okay.
You've
yeah.
really gotten it
I did
down,
that math
though.
Wrong. Yeah.
All right. Your kitchen is always just has all the things I need and want, and everything always looks so pretty. What are like the three kitchen appliances that you think you use the most if you had to have only three?
My food processor. I'm obsessed with it because you can slice anything.
Yes, agreed.
I have a Vitamix blender that I use it more than anything in my entire kitchen.
I'm right there with
smoothies
you.
Smoothies in the morning and sauces and everything goes in there.
We're 2 for 2 right now on our favorite kitchen appliances. Gabby, keep it coming.
Oh my gosh. This is a lot of pressure to think of my third one.
It's okay. I don't think I have a third one. So you just go and don't worry about it if we're on the same page.
Well, I think if I had to pick, it would be a really good chef's knife. I just got these new global knives, like the ones that are all silver.
Mm.
And I don't know if they're silver, but they're like the color silver.
Yeah.
They're not made of, yeah, whatever.
Do you sharpen your own knives?
What?
Do you sharpen your own knives?
No. Gosh, no. That's way too scary for me.
That's how I feel, too. So what do you do about it? You just buy a new knife?
No, I go to William Snowman. They do it for me.
See? I never knew that.
Yeah.
That's so good to
know. Yeah, they also... Sir La Table will do it for you. Some people's farmers markets have knife sharpeners.
That's what I always see.
This is amazing.
See, my husband was a knife salesman in high school, so he does all the knife sharpening for us.
Oh.
Door-to-door knife salesman.
Cutco.
Yeah, Cutco. Exactly.
My brother did that. Are there any cookbooks or food sites besides your own that you look to for recipes or inspiration?
I don't look at a ton of other food sites just because I don't want to be like...
Co-opt things.
Yeah, and I just want to, like, be creative on my own. And
totally.
I don't want to be like, oh, they did this, I should do this, you know? So I don't do that. But I do have a huge cookbook collection at home. I'm actually obsessed, like, borderline inappropriately obsessed with Chrissy Teigen's new book.
I saw your post about
from
that.
It, and it's only been out for 2 or 3 weeks.
Favorite recipes from that so far?
Favorite recipe? The clams. I don't remember the exact title, but the linguine with clams or something like that was delicious.
Okay.
And then she has
so
this cheesy guacamole. It's a guacamole, which, you know, I love anything avocado, but it has cheddar cheese in it, and it is so good. And I can't even understand why no one has put cheddar in their guacamole before. It's kind of genius.
Is it just regular guacamole plus shredded cheddar cheese?
Yeah, and then you let it marinate, but you just let it, like, chill in the fridge for an hour, so everything kind of, like,
fuses
together, and then you eat it with fresh tortilla chips, and it's kind of like a nacho and a guacamole all on the tortilla chip at the same time, and really, there's nothing more you need in life.
I'm suspicious about putting it in the fridge for an hour.
No, that's sometimes, you have to do that a lot
but
with
not
a lot
with
of
avocados.
Stuff.
But you put enough lemon or lime juice in it so it won't go brown.
Okay.
Because, you know, it's like super depressing when guacamole
so
goes
depressing.
Brown.
Yeah.
We should, we should end. Everybody is like basically look in their refrigerator to see if they have the ingredients for this guacamole right now. Gabby, thank you so much for being on the show and for just being so wonderful and inspiring in everything that you do.
Oh my gosh, thank you guys. I can't wait to see you next.
Yes.
Check out Gabby at whatsgabbycooking.com. Wait, is it with a G on the end or no?
Yes, it's with a G, whatsgabbycooking.com.
And then what's your Snap handle?
What's Gabby cooking? No G at the end because they cut me off. I got
jerks.
Apparently, it was too long.
Jerks.
Because real G's are silent. okay, Gabby, you're amazing. Thank you so much. We hope to continue to be fed by you forever.
Whenever you want.
All right.
You've been listening to A Few Things with Claire and Erica. We are here every Wednesday on Heritage Radio Network at 5 p.m. Something we should shout out because it's happening soon. Our book club.
Yes.
You should read this book. Oh, my God. Claire and I were both obsessed with it. I think you cried more than I did.
I cried like a baby. Also, I finished it for those keeping track of the suspense of whether or not I was actually going to finish this book.
Listeners, I finished it.
Yes.
It is called A Sleepwalker's Guide to Dancing.
By Neera Jacob.
And we're talking about it on March 30th, so tune in then. And in the meantime, go review our show on iTunes.
Sign up for our newsletter on ofakind.com and buy everything.
That's the show.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.